Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
What's good, internet? It is Friday, March 12th, 2021, and you are listening to Waypoint Radio, episode 379. I'm your host, Austin Walker. I'm joined today by Kato.
Fucking hurry up intro. You're usually like a muttering between the clap and the what's up.
We gotta get into a podcast. Also joining us, Rob Zachney. Sorry, you're taking a sip of coffee. I should have waited until you were finished. That's on me.
I could sense it coming, so I didn't get that far. Good morning, everybody.
Good morning, Rob. Patrick Klepek also with us.
I'm just gonna if I speak Russell Wilson to the Chicago Bears into the air, does it happen? Yeah. Like
That's materializing whatever it's called, whatever.
The secret. Mm-hmm. Materializing the secret.
Yes, that's what I need. I'm materializing below basement quarterback play into my football team.
I mean, Patrick, remember the last time you visualized something with the mm-hmm. Bears, you were thinking, I sure hope Cody Parkey doesn't do that thing again. You cost us a Super Bowl.
I believe that was my brother, but that's, you know, he's close enough. So it's, you know, it's yeah, blood. Uh-huh. So
thank you to your brother, as always.
Mm-hmm. Rob, are those dogs on your mug?
Those are.
It's adorable. It's like three dots and two ears. It's very good.
That's good. Yeah. Minimalist dogs.
On and little ears form an M for Mina.
Mina.
Friends, my Mina mug.
I thought you were going to say,
did you buy that for yourself?
No, MK picked these up.
Incredible insult. Incredible.
He didn't even pick it up that way. We could have gone right past this where, yes, that insult lay there,
but Rob was just like, incredible insult. You buy that yourself? Yeah? Huh.
Now he's mad. He wasn't mad before. And
okay. All right.
You said it.
Save it for the director's commentary of the
podcast.
What am
I supposed to be insulted by?
That's true. You know what?
Rob, that's the
Rob is, yeah. Rob is so confident enough in himself that, look, yes. You know, at this age, you want to buy yourself a cute mug for your dog? Get your Mina mug on.
Oh, no, to be clear, MK bought the first one, and then I went back and I was like, we need to get more. Is there a full set of these?
We gotta get all of this.
Yes.
Clearing this place
out. Love it.
Hold on, let me show you something real quick.
All right.
Okay, Rob is stepping away.
He's getting
out. Dog dad, Rob Zachney, has left the building. Presumably going to...
You know, you spend your 20s learning about yourself, you get to your 30s, and you embrace yourself. And, like, this is Rob being fully Rob.
He's in his vast kitchen, looking through various cupboards.
Mina juice cup.
Oh, he's different. Okay, yeah.
Different shapes.
And then they were selling this thing. Oh, it's a...
What is that?
Vase or pitcher of some sort, but it's got a cute little cow pattern, I think.
Yeah, it's just a cute cow pattern. That's unrelated to the dog.
Have you put anything in that?
No, but someday I hope to, Patrick.
Yeah. Well, that's what I was trying to think. I was like, what is... Because it's, you know, it's the kind of thing that you could think like, oh, if you had like a bunch of people visiting, I guess you could put like coffee creamer or something. You know, I'm trying to think like, what is
that? That's a lot of coffee creamer.
I know. I'm trying to think like, you got to like, what if that's I came to visit, Rob? Creamer. We're all like sharing the coffee. I'm trying to think like, what would you put in a thing that has the little lip at the end for careful pouring?
Lemonade. Mm. Not a lot of it, though. This is too little.
No, that's too little for to serve
sake.
Lemonade.
My actual guess is
sake.
This
sake.
Is-
sure. Yeah.
Yeah. My actual guess is it's going to end up being a vase.
Just put flowers in it.
Yeah. There's a couple florists in my neighborhood. And when they reopen, I'm like, what if flowers again?
Yeah. What if flowers again? Flowers are great. Support your local florists. There's not like a big box florist shop that has like pushed people out of the business. But people just get their flowers online now. So there is, right?
Well, yeah. It's not like a place you go to.
Right, the supermarket, that makes sense. Yeah, true, yes. Like, right, I was going to say right by the front, but that's just the supermarket that I have.
I think
that's
not
a universal supermarket.
It seems like it is, though. Like, when I'm thinking about it, it's like, you know what? Yeah, that's always right near the door. There's
it's right near the front. I guess
it's pretty. Right. Why wouldn't you put that by the door?
And I bet a lot of people are like, I want to run in and see if they have flowers. Oh, shit, they have flowers. Let me get those flowers.
Right.
You don't want that back by the ham, you know?
No, and you got to put it by the door so as people are checking out, they have that second realization where it's like, wait, I fucked up recently, and here is a sweet thing I can do.
I only bought one Mina mug. I need to get some flowers.
to make up for it. Otherwise, Rob will be mad at me for keeping the Mina mug to myself. How's everyone doing? Obviously, we're a little bit punchy today. I think we're punchy because this is the first of these the Friday pods that we've done in well over a month, because we did the reset episodes for the last like 6 weeks or something. Yeah. Five weeks. So we're back to two a week. I'm now looking at this sheet and saying, I wish we had rationed the games we talked about last on Monday, so we'd have more to talk about today.
Here's the thing. I think the Friday show is a great opportunity to talk about our evolving relationship with games.
Sure. How has your relationship evolved?
Continue.
Say more.
Oh, that was just a prompt. Like, that was an ideal that I'm throwing out.
You're working towards. My relationship.
No, but seriously.
With games.
Okay, so I have been playing a little bit of, there's a new expansion for Total War Three Kingdoms that just came out today, Fates Divided. Damn. And speaking of like evolving relationships with games, here is a weird thing I'm running into.
That's your own throw. You can't set up. I think we should talk about.
I can do
topic.
That.
And then
you ever seen a fucking NBA player toss it off the backboard and alley-oop themselves? Yeah.
That's true. That is the thing. That's you tagged yourself
and it's
in.
Sick of shit.
I badly high-fived myself. Hold on.
You did. Try again. Okay, that's a good high five.
A man can have two Mina mugs. A man can set up his own transition.
So, point is, I think the thing I'm running into with every Total War Three Kingdoms expansion is that the base game was like damn near perfect. And each of these expansions is, I'm like, all right, yeah, that's a game. That's
still this game. Yeah, more of it.
Well, so Three
What's
Kingdoms.
Your dream boy? What is the thing that an expansion is supposed to get you excited about in anything? Like, what is your dream style of expansion, whether in a game like Three Kingdoms or in anything?
So I think there's two things that an expansion can do, and ideally it would probably be doing both.
Mm-hmm.
Like a new thing to play, a bunch of new stuff to play with.
Mm-hmm.
And then a new
stuff
context.
In the toy box. Okay, sure.
So, like, for instance, I think the Warhammer games, the Total War Warhammer games, were really good at. They started rolling out expansions that basically just turned it into different games. Like when the Norska came out for Total War Warhammer 1, that was like, what if the Viking raids, but like it was all in the service of chaos. Mm-hmm. And they're playing a completely different game than anyone else in Warhammer. And so you're like, okay, here's a campaign that just feels like it's its own separate standalone game. Like, it's still the same map and everyone's still there, but you're now off doing your own thing. And weighing these different considerations in mind, and you're in a completely different part of the world. I think with Total War Three Kingdoms, the issue is that the base game kind of covered everything. Like, it goes for multiple generations. Pretty much all of the main battlegrounds of that war are there in the base game. And it was just really, really good. And so the subsequent expansions, I think, have all run into this problem of, what do you sort of wedge into that game? And the Furious Wild was sort of, honestly, an attempt at the first kind of expansion, where it's like, okay, we're going to go to Southwest China, and it's going to be like a completely different cultural group. Mm-hmm. It's going to be like, it's not the Han Chinese, basically.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And so you're going to have completely different types of units and completely different, like, building chains and economy and a new part of the map. The issue for me was the armies were cool, but like their solution to making that part of the world feel bigger was to introduce movement penalties so that you had this like tiny little jungle and everything was just slowed down.
Not fun. Yeah.
Not fun. So it was fine. Like, I think by and large, that was kind of a mixed result because the units were cool enough. Fates Divided, I'm still coming to grips with because, and honestly, I'm curious if I can see this clicking with you, Austin. It just skips the early parts of the Three Kingdoms like cycle and it's like, yeah. Look, Dong Zhuo's dead.
Right. This is just the Three Kingdoms have established themselves, right? This is like, it starts in 200 CE, which would have been post Lu Bu's defeat. That would have been.
Wait.
Yeah, the opening cutscene is him getting beheaded.
Yeah. Cao Cao and Liu Bei.
Someone fucking pursued him?
Yeah, they pursue. They pursue. I mean, time pursues all men, you know? And we'll win in the end. Also, hubris. You know, but the betrayal from your people who don't really love you so much as fear you and see that the wind is turning.
I mean, I guess you say don't follow me enough. Someone's going to try to fuck around and find out, you know?
Well, what's the thing is like, don't follow me. Listen, you need some people to follow you. But sure. But Lu Bu, I'm your follower.
Right.
And eventually they'll be like, all right, fine. We won't follow you then. Shit.
China's greatest warrior and biggest prick.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's interesting. So yeah, it is like basically just before Cao Cao becomes the person who is going to, just before Wei basically begins to grow into the kingdom that will win this war.
Right. And so I think what
Jin wins. I know. Don't send me letters. I fucking know the history. Sorry. I had to clarify.
What it cuts out is a lot of the early game Total War stuff where it's like, okay, I'm going to, which province am I going to get? I'm going to nibble off one little province. I'm going to build these farms up. This game starts, and as you say, like, Wei is a major established power in, like, north-central China.
Mm-hmm.
And has a tremendous amount of economic and military power at his fingertips. Yuan Shao is still a formidable force up there in the north. And, like, what's kind of cool is, one of the best parts of a Total War campaign is that moment where the big powers start taking the gloves off. And it's like, there's no more minnows, or if there are, they're kind of now following in our wake and it's not even worth occupying them anymore. It's time to get to the main event. And Three Kingdoms does that really, really well. This kind of skips to that part of the game, which is kind of cool. But the thing I'm struggling with a lot, and it's a bit, I can't tell if it's me or if it's the game, it's the lack of context for all this. Like, it's like, you know what it is? It's somebody just handed you a save and you're starting from their save and you're getting in there and you're like, why? It's like a scratchy sweater. It's like, why are these buildings here? Like, oh, like, Cao Cao, what were you thinking? Why did you build this building chain? It's so expensive and it's pissing people off.
Yeah, that is not ideal to me. I mean, I think that is every version of a Romance of the Three Kingdoms game has different start dates. Like, that is a thing that, not every, but, you know, that is a key thing when trying to depict this era, because there are so many big moments in it. There's, you know, from the very beginning, you have the Yellow Turban Rebellion stuff, you have the Dong Zhuo stuff. But then eventually, like, you know, you're getting late start dates where, you know, even the, you know, Shu Kingdom has like basically already fallen, or the main, you get a lot of stuff where it's like the people who you think of as the heroes of this story, or the you know, actors in this era, are all dead and gone, and we're like generations on. And most people I know like to get to that period in their various Three Kingdoms playing, but not, they don't like to start there for the reason you just said, which is like, so much of the appeal of the Three Kingdoms story is the old dynasty is gone, and lots of warlords across this, you know, this region decide, hey, we can start building this place in our vision. And the blank slate, like, fantasy is part of what appeals generally in strategy games. So the fact that it maps, and obviously China was not actually a blank slate, but the fall of the Han left power vacuums that allowed people to reshape parts of the world in ways that they wanted to. And so I think it maps to that classic strategy game fantasy really nicely. So I don't really want to trade that away. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I'm in a weird place with it, where it's like, it's still a great game, but I'm always coming back to the, and I had this with Furious Wild where I was like, do I want to do this, or would I rather be playing as one of the core starters at the starting date where Dong Zhuo is just getting up to mischief?
Yeah.
I think this game has two great starting dates. One is Yellow Turban Revolt. I think that that expansion, which might have been free, that one worked brilliantly. The Yellow Turbans were cool. And doing the whole like actual decline of the the final days of the Han ruled. Like, I love watching things fall apart. Which means the American politics is great for me, by the way.
Just,
but then the base starting date where like Duangzhou has just been driven out and is sort of retreating in the Highlands with the captive emperor. Those are two good starting dates, and that stuff is fun, and there's a lot of room for you to sort of guide your own path forward. I feel like with this one, I'm just a little bit, I can't quite get comfortable with these factions because I'm like, I know your starting position. I don't like, I don't like where this one is. I will say there is a cool thing. I'm not, it doesn't make a lot of thematic sense to me, but so they've created a faction around Liu Yan. And as near as I can tell, it's like, what if spoiled rich kid was a faction identity? And so the entire thing is about inheritance. And you build up, like, you do shit in the game and you build up like a charge of like inheritance powers. And when your character hands off, basically, like, you know, your paterfamilias dies, there's a bunch of these like inheritance resources that basically act as like temporary buffs, but like really powerful ones that you can use to like activate different armies in your faction, but it depletes. Then you kind of go back to being a bit of a fail son.
And you don't get to then rebuild that meter for like another generation
not for you.
Or something. Right. Or do you get to then build it again for the next?
So the entire thing is about weird. So if the entire thing is about generational turnover, there's kind of an incentive to, like, once I've got a good heir, be like,
how do I off my guy?
So
also weirdly, I know this is just like the main characters of this game all have special abilities and that's how it works and different mechanics, but like, oh fuck, the rest of China isn't doing inheritance. No wonder things are falling apart, you know, whatever it is. And like, no, other people are also doing this process. They just don't get a special meter to
It's the weird thing. It thematically, it doesn't really make sense. Like, one of the abilities is like, use your inherited aspiration to drill your soldiers better, which gives you 35% movement range bonus for like 10 turns or something like that.
Sure.
Which is crazy. Like, suddenly you have the only army in China that can like blitzkrieg. Like,
and this is the opposite of the traditional way you think about like a great warlord dies. The period after their death is going to be where the kingdom is at its weakest because everyone's adjusting to the new ruler. People don't trust them yet. Everything's a little slower because the lines of like that's the way we talk about. Oh, a great leader died and his fail son inherits. This is the moment to strike. And this is the opposite where you're like planning around this moment where all your bonuses kick in to go do your big shit. Right.
Yeah. And it's just it's like. Theme and mechanics, it's just, it's hard to figure out, like, what is actually happening here. Like, what are you trying to get at? Like, why is this, like, why is this Good Time Charlie, like, just basically buffed up because his dad left him, remember, son, use the super soldier training program I left you. And it's like, okay, dad. And, like, suddenly, you know, Liu Yan's paratroopers are, like, descending on Cao Cao. But I think there's one other thing that the 200 start date does have in its corner. The big powers have imperial courts full of shitheads, which is useful for a Three Kingdoms game. Because I feel like when you have that small start, you can very carefully draft your team and be like, these people aren't going to get along. This is going to go fine. 200 start date, if you're a big power, you have some really great generals who hate your fucking guts. And so you'll go bankrupt trying to bribe these guys to stay on side because they're so good. So there's that too.
That's fun. That sounds good. I need to put more time in that game. I'm a fake fan. It's true. I'm just looking at it and it's just such a pretty looking game too. Anyway, thank you, Rob, for updating us on Three Kingdoms. This is, as always, a joy to hear about and think about it, even if just conceptually, how they've been tackling this stuff. Do they have other expansions coming, or is this like it?
They haven't said this is it. My assumption is there will be more. Okay. Usually they tip their hand when they're
this
in
is
the
a
final
big
stages.
Final. Yeah. Totally. Well, okay.
I talk about sales departments.
What's up, sales department? Yeah, what's up? Did they reach out to you again?
No, but our website has changed. I feel like maybe
sure.
Welcome to Waypoint's Waypoint Radio.
Welcome to Waypoint
Podcast.
Welcome to Waypoint. It's back, baby.
Our front page is like not hugely important to the Waypoint endeavor. It's there. Love it if you go there.
But it is. If you're a salesperson,
you need a page to point to.
Right. And a week ago, you would have had to have said, we do gaming here at Vice. We have a podcast called Waypoint Radio, and we have a website called vice.com/games.
Yeah. And if we would like to bundle your sales purchase so that you would have like more traffic from this website and also this podcast, would you like multiple brand at? So yeah, we got rolled into.
You almost say activations? You almost say brand activations?
I thought about it.
We had to. We got to put it out there. That's the language these people speak in. They say shit like like brand activations, like engagement. There was one that was going around last year that no one understood what it was. Maybe it wasn't activation. I think it was activation because that's such a stupid marketing term.
Yeah, it feels gross.
Yeah, I just took a shower. I need another.
if you go to our website, it says, what does it say now? Waypoint Games by Vice is what it says. But
mine doesn't say anything.
I've got an empty bar. That's weird.
Oh, no.
I missed the teal.
Yeah.
Yeah, me too.
Colors are good.
I like the colors. But the short version is like, this is not, you know, if it was like a big splashy relaunch, you know, we would have done something. This is really just a behind the scenes, like getting ducks in a row for sales to be able to like better, to hopefully have resources to do.
Yeah, I was going to say, hopefully that does lead to resources in the long run.
Because from what I understand, like it has realistically like led to like. But yeah, we could have told you this. Like, you know, I didn't.
We
you
did.
Know,
we could have.
Well, yeah. Like,
had I mean, that like, fight, Patrick.
Made peace with, like, all right, go ahead and make the bad decision. Like, you yes. know, I guess this could result in my own layoff, even though I'm not the one making the decision, but great.
The people who made that decision are also all gone.
That's gone.
The other so fucking wild shit from this is just like, this is just a peek behind the curtain on all this is. You know, we fought tooth and nail to keep Waypoint, and the people who pushed that, you know, through were assholes and were like deceptive about whether or not there was buy-in from across the country.
The country was in for Waypoint.
But the company was not the editorial teams were not on board with like burying brands like Waypoint or broadly at the time.
Well, then it was like, all right, well, if we're going to do that, should we change the name of the podcast to like a complete rebrand and just embrace the whole thing? Like,
totally.
No, like Waypoint Radio still has cachet that we'd like to sell. It's like, this doesn't make any.
Anyway.
Okay.
As long as I live, I will never get over the realization that about 2 weeks before it rolled out, there was actually no operational plan for One Vice, like restructuring in terms of like chain of command and like team coordination. Like there was just none. It was just a brand.
The fact that we kind of got ahead of it and did that roll in with Motherboard ahead of time is the only reason that like there weren't huge immediate capital D disasters. I want to, you know, say like,
and it's a shout out to the folks at Motherboard who are like chiefly responsible for like correcting this like really like bad decision. Was like, Jason over at Motherboard, like being in like management, you know, and be like, hey, this makes you games are popular. Shouldn't you try and sell that stuff? And like has slowly, you know, worked to get this. You know, does it, you know, get us increased headcount or anything like that? But, you know, and who knows if that
and
even
if it
does it down
did,
the line.
We
but
it
is nice.
About it
is nice even just to have the name back. But now it's like, I've told so many PR people, like, I know it was Waypoint. Now it's Vice Games. And now I'm going to like change my signature. I'm just not going to say anything. I'm just going to change it in the signature. I'm not going to send a PR blast that is like, hey, the name has changed again. I'm just going to ignore it unless someone. Because I still get things that are like, hey, can we publish this on Waypoint? And I'm like, yes, you can.
Yes, you can.
And then people are like, can we publish on Vice Games? Like, yes, you can. And both those things will continue to be true, if only to continue to confuse PR people into sending us more code than they actually should because they're confused about the brand relationship between Motherboard, Vice Games, and Waypoint. Send us another code for that big AAA game.
What was it on that fucking Smash Brothers trailer? It was like weird in one word when they like quoted.
Oh, was it? Was it not just like Vice?
No, was it was like.
Oh, it was like Vice Gaming or something?
I think it was
like
Vice Waypoint.
With V.
Oh, right.
It's funny because like PR will sometimes. So usually the way like those quotes appear is like PR sends you an email and they say, hey, are you okay with this, you know, quote? Like, is it not completely mangling, you know, like what you said? And the reason you said you agree to that stuff is, you know, it's like a nice promotion for your website to be in like a, you know, trailer viewed by a million people or whatever. So usually that stuff is pretty innocuous. And sometimes they'll ask like, hey, like, I know you're Waypoint, but like, could it just be Vice? And it's like, yeah, sure. Like,
I don't care. Fine.
I know
you care more about, you know, that people don't know what Waypoint is.
Yeah.
You know that people know what Vice is. They don't know what Waypoint
the people
is.
Who
wider
know,
audience.
The people who need to know what Waypoint is know what Waypoint is. The people watching the Smash Bros.
Already know
trailer.
This game is coming out or whatever. Yeah. Uh-huh. You know?
So put it whatever you want. That sometimes is what leads to, like, even though, like, I'll theoretically, because I'm usually vetting most of these, like, I'll agree, like, yeah, label it this.
That doesn't
necessarily guarantee that's what comes out in the trailer later.
No. Anyway.
So that's why it says Waypoint. Waypoint's back.
Are we changing the Twitter feed at any point? Or is it just going to stay Vice Games?
That's a good question. Huh. I don't.
That should probably
I'm
change.
I'm sure Emily would be game to change it if we pinged her. Like,
yeah, sure. Well, I truly don't know what salespeople and exactly. I don't know what.
See, that is probably that. Like, so our discussions over like, how this mishmash of brand management, at least like the website, okay, so it was technically still waypoint.vice.com, but like that's sort of like neither here nor there. Like you go there and it says Vice Games, yada, yada.
But it was just a redirect too. Like they didn't even, it wasn't
right,
being hosted
right.
there.
Like the Twitter account is by far the funniest one because it's still at Waypoint, but it's branded Vice Games.
Games by Vice.
And then it says Games by Vice in the bio. Like,
which always makes me sound,
funny.
That sounds like a publisher to me.
Pinned tweet note
anything.
From our editor.
Waypoint is joining the new vice.com. We should unpin that too.
Yeah, no, we shouldn't. No, we shouldn't.
Let it lie fallow.
Oh, God. One day we'll plant something new in this corpse.
It'll all come around.
It always does. It always does. Anyway.
The natural cycle of nature, you know?
Yeah, let's take a break and we come back and talk about another game and then maybe dip in the question bucket and then kick out of here. I feel like, you know, it's Friday. The weather is nice. I went on like three nice walks this week because the light jacket strategy last week, I was like, I'm going to start wearing a light jacket. It'll force the spring to keep up with me. It worked. It's been in the 60s all week. That's listen, I'll take credit for it.
Oh, it's tactical vest season again, baby.
Excuse me.
Perfect.
Got a little dog poo bag holder in the 9mm magazine pouch.
Good to go.
Yep.
Wow. The people with tactical dog gear are out walking again. Nature is healing.
It's really horrible how practical that fucking thing is and how much I love it. I'm like, everything is there.
Do you only own one tactical vest, or have you gotten yourself like a couple different prints, different
colors? No, the entire
colors?
Point is just one that has everything I need to take the dog out. Also, turns out there's two big like carrier holders like in your like by your hips. Mm-hmm. They're perfect size for a liquor bottle. Just putting that out there.
What are we talking about?
So you're like, saying I need to get a tactical vest.
Does Kirkland even sell that size?
No, you'd have to get. Actually, I could get that craft that Rob has. And like, can I just stick that? Would that fit in there?
Uh-huh. Yeah. Love it. Uh-huh. Incredible. All right. We're taking this fucking break. We'll be right back.
Small details or big surfaces, tight corners or odd shapes, flat, rounded, textured, or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with five different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies,
edges and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
All right, we are back. Curse of the Dead Gods is a game that I've been...
I played that last night, too.
Yeah.
For a loop. I wanted to see the loop.
Gods. Yeah, you have to see the loop. That's exactly it, right?
Like, the loop is great. I don't want to play that game anymore, but we should talk about the loop. So Curse of the Dead Gods came out a couple of weeks ago, right? I want to say that's true.
I think it was an early access game last year.
It has been. Yeah, no, it's been around for a while. But you're right. The 1.0 was just recently. They did the same thing that like Hades did, which is like, hey, here's our Switch version. Yeah. Comes out, yeah. You know, alongside the early access. And I tried the Switch version and it ran kind of crummy. And I was doing it handheld. Maybe it was better docked. But either way, I was just like, ah. Also, I just played Hades. Like, I wasn't really
looking for an isometric roguelike action game.
Yeah, I felt like it had
my
fill.
You're managing a bunch of enemies and resources and changing weapons. Like, it is one of those, to the degree that one of the first reviews I saw for it on Steam was very much like, if you're looking for a Hades-like, and I wanted to, yeah, I was like, that does not roll off the tongue.
Speaks to Hades, though.
Well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is this Hades?
But, like, so this one, I guess you don't always have a gun, but you have two weapons. You get three weapons, right?
Three weapons. My favorite weapon is the third weapon, anyway.
I got a hammer at some point.
That hammer is unbelievable. Was it the lightning hammer?
Yes, the lightning hammer.
That thing, it made every boss I fought completely negligible. Nothing could stand up to it. Every enemy was it was nothing. Anyway, we'll get there.
Continue. And then you have access to a torch. There's a big light dark mechanic in which you can, you know, like you run into a room, it'll be completely dark. There'll be something you can light in a fire, which could be like an object or could be an enemy. And so like one of the strategies will be like swipe at the enemy with a, you know, with your torch, light them on fire, and then, you know, get to business on doing your attacks, which is like you have charge attacks,
extra damage.
You can roll.
If you're if you're in the dark, you take extra damage, I want to say.
Do you also get cursed? What is it? Isn't that the mechanic?
That
cursed?
Is the mechanic. Yeah, I think, yeah. Do you get cursed if you get hit in the dark?
I don't know. Maybe I didn't that's play what enough it is. To, but there's
I put a few hours into it, and I still don't have this 100%. You know,
One of its like kind of defining features is its curse mechanic. So like every door that you go through, like every, you know, you're moving through like this mini map, and you can pick like, hey, I would like to get a better weapon next time, or I'd like to get gold, or I'd like to get an ability upgrade. Every time you do that, you like fill a curse meter, and every time that meter fills, it fills in like a curse, I don't know, a dot. So there's like a second meter that you're filling up every time you fill up the first curse meter, and every time you do that, you get like a negative perk, which, you know, like every
they're
time you walk
interesting. Yeah, go ahead.
I can't remember what the one I got they were, yeah, like they're not just like
one of, so one
you're
of them
fucked.
That I
like,
got
they're a little
lot
more unique than that
was every time that you get hit, you lose 25% less health than you normally do. But on top of losing health, you lose gold equal to the amount of health you lost, right?
Oh, and the one I got was gold begins disappearing as soon as you see it. So you just have to like start collecting it immediately.
That's interesting.
I want to say it was worth more. So it's like if you get it before it's gone, it's worth more, but it's going to disappear. So you'll see like a spawn of enemies and it's like, all right, they're around this gold. I need to get that and then focus on fighting them. So there's like a lot more emphasis on like swings like that where you're just having to consider you just have way more weapons, way more abilities. It's like you can do a normal attack, a charge attack. If you have a gun, it's like a normal shot, a perfect shot. You can dodge. You can also parry. Like there's
combos to mix up things like if you do regular attack, if you have a sword and a gun, and it's like regular attack, gun, then that's one sort of gun attack. And if you do regular attack, gun, that's like a wider cone AoE thing. So it's like there's a little bit more character action combo stuff here than in Hades. And there's a bunch of weapon types, like you said, right? There's like swords, daggers, just in the main hand, swords and maces and daggers and claws. No, daggers is an offhand. Claws, and there's spears and bows and guns and whips.
It's got a lot of really cool. Like, hey, did you play a game like Hades, but you wanted like
more like
stuff.
More. Yeah. it doesn't feel as good to play as Hades, which is
I don't like how it feels much.
Well, that was kind of my problem. Is like I got like halfway through the tutorial on the Switch and was like, I don't enjoy controlling this character, which again is one of those things that like speaks to Hades, in which like Hades is just immaculate. Like there is not, that is like the top of the mountain in terms of like controlling a character amongst like a really chaotic environment and still feeling like whatever I screw up is of my own making, despite how much is going on at once. That's a really difficult thing to do. Mm-hmm. And even though like, I don't think Curse of the Dead Gods is like nearly as chaotic, at least like in the, you know, early parts that I was playing, I don't know. I'm sure things like I forgot what buttons did what would be like figured out over time, but I found it like overwhelming, not in like a particularly fun way. And it just felt like there was kind of just too much to grasp onto. Now, I'm sure if you got into this particular one, that skill curve works itself out. That amount of like options is like, it turns in from a negative to a positive, but I don't know. I didn't like controlling the character very much. So mostly mm-hmm. like I played like 20 minutes and I was like, I'm going to die so I can find out the neat thing that Austin said I should see, which is, I'm not sure what exactly it is you thought was neat. So I'll just say what I thought was neat. And you can tell me is, you know, you die and then you, you know, you go back to a hub area and you can spend, you know, currency on different attributes that you can equip that are passive, you know, upgrades to your character, which is pretty standard stuff. And then you go out to do you want to head back out and fight again? Now, normally what happens is you just like head out to a door and like the procedurally generated world is in front of you, or you're going to get the option to choose where you go next on the mini map when you get through an area. But Curse of the Dead Gods, one, gives you like three different areas you can start in, three different starting areas. And like the thing I thought was coolest was this thing called events, mm-hmm. which is just below those three options. And it's like, hey, do you want to do like just a weird ass run? Like we're going to give you like a strange set of conditions that you have to work through. And if you manage to survive, then like, because I don't think you're playing, I didn't actually do it, but I don't know. It didn't seem like you were playing from like start to finish, like a main run. It's just like a one-off sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like, hey, you're going to be able to get like way more of this specific type of currency, but like X, Y, and Z is going to happen room to room. And I was like, that sounded fun. Like in Hades, one of the things I ran into was that heat is what like you could turn up the different variables. Like did you get far enough to do that? Austin?
Yeah. Yes. That's.
So basically if you haven't played Hades, like once you've beaten it once, in order to like get a complete, keep getting the drops to like upgrade, your weapons to like get like more powerful or different perks. You have to turn on things called heat, which is like, you know, make it so enemies are stronger or there are more enemies, or every enemy starts with a base level of armor that you need to hit before you can actually do their health. And, you know, I did just enough that like I got all the stuff I needed and then never did anything more than that. I know some people are like, this is my favorite part of the game. I just keep adding heat checks and like the game just keeps getting wilder. But
it's a very Jason Kebler.
Yeah. But like I need it thrust upon me. Like I need like, hey, here's the weird run. Like go figure it
out. Just do one of them today.
Cause otherwise I'm going to just kind of like, I kind of min maxed my way through that stuff to get through the end of the game. And I liked this event idea of, hey, just go do this one off. Like we've gave you a couple of rule sets to play in. Go see what happens.
Harder probably most of the time, or they're weirder, like you said. So they're a full run, and a full run means longer than what those first levels are. So like the map, when you go through the first door from your hub, which by the way, this whole game is like you are a deeply like stereotypical adventurer sort with big, I want to say mutton chops, white dude. Deeply boring after playing Hades. Like there is no there. This game's like this sense of personality and flavor is devoid.
It seems like the game at this point where it's not like Hades. The reason you're playing a character. He has an arc.
Yes.
This game should just have a character creator or a couple of options to switch in Spelunky. Like give me some swaps. You know.
Sure. And you're going through like Mesoamerican. Like ruins without any, there's no context, right? Yeah. You just kind of are there.
Apart from the context of being a white person coming into some place that is very obviously.
Yeah, 100%, right?
Well, that, right. We just take that for granted, Kato. Sure. That's the baseline that we're working with here culturally.
Yeah. This dude is just looking to steal stuff, basically. Looking to pillage from history.
Yeah.
I want to say there's a narrator at some point in the beginning, maybe, but there is no real clean, interesting explanation. It's just using this for wallpaper. It's just, and in fact, so that's the thing, right? It's like the three, you get a map of all the areas you can go to, and those areas are, I want to say, jaguar themed, eagle themed, and a third similarly grounded in, you know, the mythologies of native, grounded in air quotes, in you know, a half memory of some, I guess I can't speak to how much research the developers put in necessarily, but you get what I'm saying, right? And though each of those things, serpent is the third one.
Yeah.
Each of those like temples basically has multiple tiers of difficulty. And at each tier, the run gets longer. So the first run that you have access to is just go in, beat whatever, 10, like, they're bigger than rooms. They're bigger than Hades rooms. They often have multiple little rooms in them. Mm-hmm. But beat 10 levels and then get to a boss, beat the boss. And then at tier one, that's it. That's a complete run, which I also think is a neat difference. Like,
that's
imagine
cool.
Getting to Meg and beating Meg in Hades. And the first time you do that, you're like, all right, cool. You beat. That's it. You go home.
It doesn't matter that you're limping out of this fight and 100%. You're going to get crushed in the next area. Like, yes. You're good. You did it. You've actually satisfied the win condition.
You get your super currency to go upgrade. We unlock a bunch of stuff because you get the skull upgrade instead of just or whatever the orb is instead of the skulls and the rings. You get a bunch of those and go back to the hub and then do one of these other tier one things where you go through the 10 levels, you fight the boss, you're done.
Tier two,
you have to do that, and then you have to go through another set of 10 levels to then get to the real true boss of that area, who is harder than the previous ones. So I like that a lot. And because I think that's like, one, I just like being able to say how much of a game I want to play. Like, it's nice to be like, I only have, not that you can't save in here. You can save at the beginning of any new floor, basically, just like Hades or a lot of.
But it's nice to be able to, like, you know, turn the game off, like, turn off your Switch and be like, I feel like I had a complete experience for the time that I had.
The other reason that it works is the other half of this curse thing that we started to talk about is. So you get that curse whenever you open a door. You get it whenever you get more curse points. You also get more curse points again when you get hit. I want to say in the dark. But then also, if you get to one of the shrines, you can make a choice as to whether to buy something with gold or spend corruption points, basically, to get it. So maybe you get to a weapon shrine and there's like a dope whip that has like electricity through it. And you're like, I want that, but I don't have enough gold. Let me just buy it for 50 corruption points. And there are 5 tiers of corruption. So my first runs were me like getting up to tier 3 or 4 of corruption. And the first 4 tiers are just pulled from the same random set of things, right? Where it's just like, I got one that was like some of the torches are already lit with a shadow flame. And those, and when you're in there, you can see enemies just fine. But you can't, I want to say like the actual light is not there and you're still, so it counts as you being in the dark or something like that.
I'm curious. So the game like gives you like a very ominous warning the first time you encounter corruption. Right. That's like, hey, these first couple perks are going to be like, just like a fun way to kind of mix with the game. And like, the fifth one's going to make the game like oppressive. Like you're going to die.
An example of that, the one that I've gotten a couple of times now, reduces your health down to 1 HP. It's just poison that will reduce you down to 1 HP. You won't die unless you take damage.
Is it over time or is it? It's an immediate.
It's over time.
One.
So if you have 1,000 health, it's like do. Like it's gonna get there. This sucks.
That's pretty good.
And so like that. And so in a short run, in a single boss tier run, that's something you could overcome. Right? You'd be like, all right, I'm gonna power through this. I can beat one boss with five curse tiers. Because I just have enough of a build where I can push through it. But you can't, I could not do that on a, then like, all right, do 10 more floors now. Like, fuck, no, I can't. I don't have that. And so that is kind of fun. Like that part of curse management is cool. I don't know that there's much more here for me, though. As someone who did not get who did not hit final credits on Hades, like if I want to play one of these, I still have that to play. And on top of it not being like a weird colonial fantasy, Hades is filled with characters I'm interested in and little storylines that I'm curious to see how they wrap up. And I'm not saying that that game was is going to be perfect in its execution, but like that those are things I like and people that I am fond of. This doesn't have people in it. This has like a guy and some enemies, and I don't know that any of them are people. most of them seem to just be, I mean, this dude is just a guy who kills things and that's all he does. And then I don't know, sometimes I fight a guy who can spit poison at me or produce some sort of poison offspring that chases me down or other poison shit. I spent a lot of time in these snake temples. They're scary. So that is Curse of the Dead Gods.
I would like to see like some of their ideas about like structure in a different game. Yes. It's basically like where like it, the hour I played was like, I don't really want to spend much more time here, but it's got some really smart ideas about like structure, and it makes me excited to see some of that stuff in a you know, a different game that, you know, is further distant. Like this game is just hurt by Hades in lots of ways, but also just like I said at the top, like just not really being in the mood for another one of these at the moment. But eventually I will be. And it's like it's cool to think that there are so many of these games that when you play one that like these are genuinely cool riffs on something that I thought like a lot had already been settled in terms of design and structure. It's like, oh no, like there's still like, you know, a ways to go in terms of ideas.
All right. Unless there's anything else, I feel like we should dip into the question bucket before we wrap up today, because we got some salad dressing emails to go over.
Oh my God.
It's time for all your salad dressing takes. If you have questions or recipes, you can send them to gaming@vice.com.
Why are you tempting fate like this?
Well, the answer is the thing here is, one, it's fine if people email us salad dressing recipes. That doesn't hurt us. Yeah. Salad dressing recipes can't hurt us, Rob.
Actually, there's a lot of good ones. I've actually been bookmarking.
That's the actual thing.
Also, shout outs to whoever was like, hey, somebody wrote in who was like, hey, making salad dressings isn't that hard. Why don't you just macerate these shallots? Somebody called that out and was like, Rob's not up for that. And I want that person to know, thank you. I'm not up for that. Not at 10 at night. Like, whatever you think, like, lower your expectations of late night Zachney. Lower them.
But again, you do it early. You don't make the dressing live. Anyway, I'm saying you prep. You have that nice carafe, that cow carafe you showed us before. Fill it
with ranch.
Did you see the video of the little British girl trying out ranch dressing for the first time?
What? She loved it. Yeah, there's a video going around of a British girl, like, I don't want to say it's a TikTok, being like, my friends in America sent me this. I know this is very popular in the States. I've never had it before. Oh, and then she dips like a celery stick in it. Not celery stick, a cucumber stick in it, and loves it. And it's like, I will be using this.
Yeah.
Or something. It was very funny. Anyway, there is a link here from an anonymous person who wrote in for carrot ginger dressing that I think, Kato, this is it.
Look, actually,
this is it.
Shout outs to everyone who sent me multiple different carrot. Okay. Yeah, that is it. It's carrot, ginger, and miso is like the kind of the big main things, and there's different variations on like, you know, rice, wine, vinegar in there and shit. I have all of it in my pantry already. I'm gonna make some over the weekend and like just I love it.
I want to come over for dinner.
Thank you,
everyone get the vaccine so
absolutely.
I can have dinner night. Well,
I got my first shot, so you know, in a month or so
in this picture.
This is a big carafe of. This is nice. I like that little. That's fun.
Yeah.
God, I want to eat that salad right now. It looks so good. Yeah.
I'm so excited to make this fucking dressing. Like, immediately, as soon as people were like, yeah, here. Funnily enough, Christina had just bought miso to make some miso soup. So it's like, oh, we already got the miso. The rest of the stuff is easy. Thank you all for finding that.
How long does miso keep open in the fridge?
I don't know.
Good question.
This is our first block of miso, so we're going to find out.
Like, we keep running into problems where, like, there's a block of miso toward the back of the fridge that we're like, that's
well, towards the back. There's your issue right there.
Yeah,
you got to forget about that.
Yeah, don't let it. Yeah.
The back is just for pickling. The back is where you keep the pickles. Those will keep.
They'll just get more. That's where you want them. Yeah.
They'll marinate. They'll get better.
God, you know what's fun is to forget that you have some pickles in the fridge and then find them and then be like, oh, today is looking up, baby. Hell, we got some pickles on deck.
Gonna make some pickle juice.
Wow. Speaking of, here we go. I'm just gonna read this part. This person emails questions about giant robots and mechs and stuff. I'm gonna skip that part. That's thank you for that part of the question, Martin. That's just for me. I also wanted to add a food question to the giant ranch battle. A few years ago, my mom brought home a 2-liter jar of pickles that she bought because it was on sale. 2-liter jar of pickles.
God
because
damn.
Because it was on sale and it seemed like a great deal. However, when inspecting the jar, my brother noticed a small print text that said, please consume within 2 days of opening. My question is thus, what would you cook to be able to eat a jar of pickles of that size in 2 days?
I have a major question.
What?
Yeah. Was that a stick-on warning that like, hey, these things are so these things are so beyond safe storage?
It must need to be
eaten right away.
It just says small print text.
Was it always like on the label? Oh my god.
That sounds like it's on the label.
That's just absurd. Are these pickles or not?
Yeah, right? Like that's the point.
What are they?
You're supposed to leave them in there and they just kind of chill. I mean, pickling stuff will go bad eventually, but 2 days?
Are these ancient pickles?
these are Egyptian crypt pickles.
Then 2 days isn't going to make a difference.
No, you're right. I don't know.
They were made with the juice from that sarcophagus.
I've never seen that before.
You know, 2 days? It sounds like some gutless lawyer was look, because there's technically a possibility that 2 days after opening these pickles, they can turn into a vector for toxins. We just have to put this warning on here. Now, obviously, no person is ever going to eat them all within 2 days, but if someone dies of, say, botulism, we can at least say.
I got the solution here. Martin, from Sweden, a country that probably has better food regulations than we have here in the States, that requires more accurate and broad warnings.
That's not accurate.
Who could say? I don't know what the pickle situation is in Sweden. I've never had Swedish pickles. So maybe things go bad there quicker. Who could say? I think you're probably right.
Pickling does not work as it does for those of you in warmer climes.
Right. It's like the altitude problem with baking, but with latitudes.
God, I really want to. I want a photo. I want to know the brand. I want to know.
Yeah, people, is it out an there, extra sticker? Was it on the label? This is very important.
It's very important. It changes it a lot.
Yeah.
Here's a question that I think is deceptive because
We didn't answer that question. What do you do with 2 liters of pickles?
Fuck. You eat them.
You don't. There's not an answer to that question. You eat as much as you can and then buy pickles.
Can you make, is there anything you make with pickles? Because I feel like that's the issue, is that pickles is like usually, a condiment almost, a topping.
You can make like a pickle salad.
They
go
great on a charcuterie board.
Yeah. Yeah, totally. Absolutely. But it's only part of the thing. It's not like it's not something like, I don't know. If I had a bunch of carrots, I could make carrot juice or something. Like, I could make it into something else.
Pickle is like
processing.
The end of the tech tree.
Right, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. Could you make a weird sauerkraut out of them?
Nope. Sure. Why not?
I think the flavors that are already say they're dill pickles, right? That's my assumption.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think there's any, you can't redirect the sort
the
of pickling
flavor profile
thing into a sauerkraut at that point. I think you could. I think you create something you could like put on a fork and it's like sauerkraut. I think it would be nasty.
Yeah.
Nasty.
What if you mixed it in with sauerkraut?
Sure.
What if you diced these pickles?
Sauerkraut is just pickled cabbage, right?
Yeah,
it's pickled cabbage. Like with a certain type. I mean, if you matched. It depends. Yeah, it depends on whether or not the spices matched or whatever else is in there apart from like the.
But when I'm picturing that mix, I'm like, that sounds really good on like an Italian sausage or something like that, or a bratwurst. That could be a lot of fun.
Great.
But that's not going to help me deal with the 2 liters of pickles.
what did I say?
How many brats do I need to put away 2 liters of pickles?
if COVID was gone, this wouldn't be an issue. I'd have a party. Pickle party.
Pickle party.
Everyone gets one. Welcome to the pickle party, ladies and gentlemen. It's time to eat these
pickles. Your solution to everything can't be rolling a grill out into the street. You're like, it's not. Can.
Fucking block
you. You can't solve your problems with a grill, Austin.
Yes, I can.
The pickle party's on the here. Pickle party's position on block parties is like they can fix everything.
They can fix everything. They bring communities together. What is, asks Swaz, the perfect peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Ooh. A deceptive question, because I think the immediate response is, what are you fucking it's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. But there's lots that goes into that question. What type of bread are you using?
Yeah.
What type of peanut butter are you using? What's your jelly situation? Are you jelly or are you jam? What sort of flavor is there? Mm-hmm. Are you cutting it down the middle? Are you doing a little diagonal cut? What are you doing with the crust? Crust on, crust off. There's all these decisions that go into making a simple peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and we just don't think about them. We just make it and just eat it and move on.
I think about it.
And I'm good with that.
Yeah. And that's fine by me, says Rob Zachney.
Definitely toasted bread. I generally go for a sourdough.
Okay.
Crunchy.
What, you, what the fuck is this?
Like, already Kato is just like, how about all the things that nobody does with a peanut butter and jelly sandwich? Like,
obviously.
So what's normal is, you know.
Now, obviously, you need a fresh, crusted bowl of sourdough.
I cradle the bread and I take it on a long walk. We go on 2-3 blocks. I need it to be exposed to the environment. Just get the flavor of what's around me.
I think Kato's highlighting something important here.
Uh-huh. Yes.
I think there's kind of two directions you go with your peanut butter jelly sandwich. There's basically like as close as you can get to just Wonder Bread and peanut butter and jelly.
Right.
Where it's just a sponge filled with sweet things that you just like eat it.
Yep.
Oh, also.
And then. Kato's over here trying to build a sandwich.
Yeah.
With like good bread.
100%. Also, fuck any peanut butter that has sugar in it. That shit can get. I didn't know that was a thing people did because I cannot. It's too sweet. That's what the jam is for.
Have you tried Justin's?
No. Who? I don't know Justin's.
Here, let me show you.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Well, Rob will send you his number.
Rob's going back to the kitchen. Rob's going back to the kitchen.
Great.
Rob is in his kitchen.
I can't. I need my peanut butter to be salty, and that's where the sweetness comes from, is the peanut butter and the salt together kind of like bring out a little bit of sweetness.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's my shit. Justin's honey peanut butter. Okay, so honey hold on one second. Butter. That says it's
naturally
honey
delicious.
Butter. That it does is a say different honey thing, on the front. Right? Like I get that. That's a flavored peanut butter with honey in it. That sounds good. Sure.
I don't think I can have that as my regular peanut butter.
That's a treat. That's
also now in the Kato territory of like you're not making a you're making a sandwich now the moment you've decided to purchase like specialized
Justin's
peanut butter.
Honey,
if you're not just
butter.
Like, I don't know, it's Jiffy and whatever the shit's in the fridge, like that's a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. You're okay, just like cram it in the mouth hole. Like once you've got honey peanut butter and you're thinking about the peanut butter, you're in sandwich territory.
If I'm gonna eat it, I'm thinking about what it's gonna taste like.
I'm not blaming you. I'm just saying I think there are as Rob pointed out, he tried to argue he's in the, I just put whatever on the bread and just kind of eat it. And like, no, he's in Kato sandwich territory.
Yeah. You've decentralized your decision making across time.
You all need to understand this about me. I'm in all places at all times.
Rob is the alpha and the omega.
Like I'm it depends on what are people in this room doing with like peanut butter and jelly sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to make anyone feel weird about it. So I'll be like, hell yeah, you know, I love the Wonder Bread and the Jiffy peanut butter and the Smuckers. My favorite.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Peer pressure does do that to someone, doesn't it? You can't be the person who's like, excuse me, this peanut butter is not up to par.
Also, who among us is not constantly in their 30s hanging out at parties? We're just like, all we're making are peanut butter jelly sandwiches. We're in this hypothetical scenario where it's just like, gosh, can't raise my voice because I might annoy someone. This person who's invited us over who's making 25 peanut butter jelly sandwiches.
That's a fucking meme of
the
person.
The pickle party went over well, and I thought maybe PB&Js would be a good follow-up.
Yeah, have you ever
next week is ranch.
What if you put a pickle on a PB&J?
Austin turns back to his grill and doesn't look at anyone, and everyone's like, wait, when's the last time we've seen Austin's face?
It's just gone.
Is Austin crying?
Anyway, these are good answers. You know, I like grape jelly often.
Go for a berry
I
mix.
Like strawberry jam.
Strawberry jam is what I grew up with, and like the grape was like a rare thing, and I think it's one of those things where it's like because it was rare, that wasn't rare, it was just not what was in the house. Do you know what I mean?
In my house growing up, the only thing we had was the grape. Only
yeah,
thing.
See? This is it. We swapped. And I remember
my first like diner experience, there was mixed fruit jelly in the little like ramekin with the little like one-off servings.
Wait,
and
wait
I was
a second.
Like, mixed fruit? Wait.
What's you in can, what you can mix it?
There, it's jelly, but there's other. It's not just grape. And my eyes just opened.
There's a world of jellies and jams out there just for you, Rob. If you can find them.
You find Aladdin's flying carpet and just soar through the condiment aisle.
We already did.
You got a lot of Chemex emails here, Rob. I don't know if you noticed that. Elijah wrote in to suggest you maybe not get one because they have a habit of exploding.
Excuse me?
Everything.
That's a bad habit.
This I'm a content warning for blood, but Elijah does say things turn out okay here. Last spring, my spouse was doing some, so jump ahead like 30 seconds if you don't want to hear the thing about blood. Last spring, my spouse was doing some small chores in the kitchen where a can of cat food lightly bumped our Chemex and it completely exploded into giant jacket pieces. One of these pieces sliced her hand open deeply, only inches above her wrist, spluttering blood all over our wall. In 13 years together, I had never heard a scream like that, like the one that came out of her. We genuinely worried she would lose the use of her thumb. Thankfully, the hospital was able to fix her up. Her hand works fine now. She has a cool scar. But when she tells the story to others, multiple people responded with some variation of, oh, yeah, Chemexes just explode sometimes. I've gone through 3 or 4.
Wait.
Why these friends and partners let us keep one of these death traps in our home, we still don't know. This is the first time I've heard this.
Yeah, I've never
heard this before.
I can't do that then.
Wait, what did they say Sweden. The cause was?
So a can of metal. So my guess is the Chemex is full of hot water. The metal is slightly cold. Uh-huh. The temperature differential hits the glass and it shatters.
Yeah.
And when that happens, it doesn't just shatter. It doesn't crack. It tends to explode.
I made iced coffee in my Chemex this morning. There was ice in the Chemex and then hot water being poured on top and it was fine. So I don't know. Like what? I guess it wasn't I guess it's just like drips slow enough that it's not an issue.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. I mean, like it's the sudden changes in. So sure. Like even that, like you might've just gotten lucky. Cause like, I think the moment I learned about this principle was when I stupidly was like, I put a Pyrex in an oven and I threw water into it to steam it. And it just exploded like spectacularly. Oh, like it was one of those big baking tray Pyrexes. So imagine how much glass, it turns out, is in that shape. And I would just imagine it all exploding like a fragmentation grenade.
Yeah.
And you got to clean that out of an oven. It's impossible.
God. I tried to search Chemex exploding, and it's just like, why pour over coffee? It's exploding, and what brands to buy? I can't find anything.
God.
So, but every coffee, like...
That's just like anything that has hot and cold.
I got really into AeroPress. I still use AeroPress like fully half the time. Mm-hmm. But AeroPress will tell you that you just brew from the top down, right? And then you just like put the little plunger over it and you push down and force it through. But everyone who really uses AeroPress knows that that's not going to be a full body enough cup. And so you do the inverted brew where you sort of balance it you let it set a little bit more. And then you flip it onto a mug and do the plunge. The problem is over time, the rubber gasket gets a little bit looser. Mm. And I had a friend who, like, their AeroPress just poured boiling coffee, like, all over their hand as they did that little flip.
No.
And it's pretty gnarly. But, you know, it's fine. And the coffee is really good. Every once in a while, you might get, like, a second degree burn.
But the coffee is great.
Yeah. But that's the good one.
You gotta do like a test before you start pouring. Like every time you pull out the AeroPress, just pour some water in there. Make sure there aren't any leaks.
Patrick, what's your favorite brew method?
Jesus Christ!
I like nice. Like I will drink nice coffee.
You'll drink a nice coffee.
It's sort of like coffee for me when I drink nice coffee is like
I only get it when it's like on a work trip or something. It's like, oh, I'm in San Francisco. Like, I'll get, you know, Blue Bottle or something. It's like, oh, like, I'm not going to spend like a lot of money on coffee for myself. But in a world where, like, oh, like, I'm going to just, like, expense this, like, bronk. Like, it's the same way with, like, dinners. The nicest dinners I ever eat, where it's on a work trip, where it's like, ah, don't have to worry about this $18. Like, go get it, Patrick.
But I think you're realizing, I think much as Austin wants to just like bust out the grill and have a party, mm-hmm. I'm like, no, everyone needs to come to my place. I want to make coffee for you and like baked treats.
I'd love it.
Rob, I want more than anything for you to throw a party. I would rather go to a party than hold one every time, because then I could leave when I want to. And there's no, I don't actually mind cleanup after
the
party.
Not if I put you on the grill.
Oh, fuck, you're right. I'm stuck there. I'm latched to this grill indefinitely.
But then you got props. Then you're just like holding court at the grill.
Oh, I love the whole court at a grill. Yeah. That's a fun. Yeah,
people just bring you drinks.
But well, also, the secret would be you'd open it and there'd be nothing in the grill. He just wants to role play as the grill meister.
When's the food? Like, oh, the grill's warming up. I'm still warming it up. I'm preparing.
And you have to rotate through people fast enough that no one picks up on it.
That's the thing. The thing that I like about the grill as a prop is I can get rid of people. I gotta focus on these grills.
I gotta go get something from inside. I'll be right back.
Yeah, I'll be right back.
So they're not gonna wait at the grill for you to come back.
At the grill. So that's the thing about a good party for me is something that I can modulate how many people I'm talking to for how long. And I can find respite in corners and alcoves and bathrooms and outsides, various parts of a house. I can go exploring. I can find the host's cat and play with the cat for 10 minutes and be like, oh, yeah, I guess I'll go back downstairs and talk to people again now that this cat has restored my will to live. And that I need. But I think the being a fixture also does work, so long as that fixture has the ability to trade people in and out, to bounce around, et cetera. So, yeah. We should have a cookout, IMO.
Next save point, cookout edition.
Oh, we should do outdoor save point. I wanted to do a save point on the roof so bad.
That would be great.
A summer roof stream would be so good. Joel and I looked into it. We're like, when we were first thinking of doing the follow up to the first Waypoint 72, we definitely were like, the next time we have to do some sort of outdoors thing. We definitely thought about doing it in relation to like an E3 home team away team thing, where we were going to do like some people will stay here and do like video coverage from the Vice roof, and other people will go. That was before the fiasco with that freelance camera operator tanked our video budget.
Oh my god!
We don't even put.
I wasn't even here for that.
That person's not here. That person doesn't listen to our podcast.
Also, that idea isn't as good anymore because once upon a time, Vice had a really beautiful view from the back deck.
This is true. This is true.
And then, and this has been great. It's been fun watching this happen in Brooklyn. Every single waterfront property, it's been an arms race of like, how can I be the biggest douchebag in the world and just build the most sight obstructing monolith right on the waterfront so that nobody else in Brooklyn behind me can see any of the river or the skyline. And so there, you know, used to be lots of people had beautiful views of the city. And now it's just like massive waterfront condo building one after another.
I think we still have a tiny view, but it's encroaching.
We can kind of see the bridge. If we shoot it the other direction, you can see
barges?
The bridge.
Yeah.
I do like barges.
Bridges
I do
and
like
barges. Seeing the bar. That's
yeah,
the,
bridges
that's the view.
Yeah. That's all right. They're a good band. This one comes in from Corey, which I'm just going to say this one came in. Let's just say it came in a December. What's good, Wayfarers? With a new Resident Evil on the horizon, at least at the time of this writing, there's been a lot of talk about survival horror.
There is a new Resident Evil on the horizon. It comes out May 8th or whatever.
That's right. That's the one Corey was definitely talking about when they sent this
A first-person Resident Evil game is coming out soon.
In the horizon. That's right. Waypoint is back, baby. With a new Resident Evil on the horizon, at least at the time of this writing, there's been a lot of talk of survival horror and where it went, and most especially where it died as a genre. What if, in the biggest twist of them all, it never left? It was calling from inside the console all along. Let's look at the Dark Souls series, a series typified by resource shortages, some of the best jump scares you'll find in any game, and a control scheme that is far more about creating a sense of space than it is utility. And if you want to talk about Bloodborne, you get some existential cosmic horror too. Why is it that these games don't get credit as horror games despite being incredibly successful versions of the genre? Never stop casting, Corey. Well, Corey, if you're still listening to this podcast, let's see here. 4.5 years later, I think
is he asking horror or is he asking survival horror? Those are different.
That's the thing. I do
survival
think
horror is a subgenre of the horror. Like horror is pretty broad and like over encompassing. Like I think survival horror is like, you know, yo, it's inventory management. It's like not having very much at the beginning of the game and then having 900 shotgun shells at the end.
Yeah.
Because you don't know how to use your items.
Dark Souls will hit you with a resource management thing in the middle of a run where you're like, oh shit, I'm out of Estus, or hey, I don't have enough fire bombs or whatever, fire.
Should I go back to this bonfire or should I just keep pushing?
Totally. But because you can always go back to the bonfire or grind out more resources, I never feel like scarcity is scary in those games. It can be annoying. It can be like, ah, fuck, I wish I had more blood vials in Bloodborne. But I'm not scared because I'm low on blood vials in Bloodborne. I panic a little bit if it's like, oh no, but not
and you're
really.
And you're annoyed because you're gonna have to go grind for an hour to fight those two trolls to get the blood vials to drop.
Exactly. I do think those games are all tied very closely to horror in that broader sense. I think a lot about that great gif from when in Dark Souls, God, is it 3?
I think Dark Souls 3 is where there's the boss where you hold the torch up.
The torch, the skull, like the big skeleton lord.
But there's also a famous Dark Souls gif from the first game where someone is like putzing along with the torch and like sees one of the giant, like, they're not a spider, but it's like, you know, it's like the skeleton's like close to the ground. It has like the big elongated body and like they come up to it and just go like, just nope out. Like I remember I've seen that gif a bunch of times for from the first game. It also didn't like Vinny have a famous time. Maybe that I'm sure Vinny had some.
Was that
sort
getting
of,
kicked? Was that Vinny getting kicked?
He got kicked by a big skeleton. There's a path you go.
A lot of skeletons Dark Souls 1. In those games. Yeah.
Good skeletons in those games.
Those games are good.
Are you going to be able to make your own bonfire in Elden Ring? You got a big open space.
That's fun. The idea of like, you make your
grow
own.
Out over that,
set
baby.
Your own. come to Austin Walker's Bonfire and Grill. We got PB&J's, any kind you want. We got pickles. We got ranch dressing.
Oh, I got to go talk to these skeletons over here. Yeah. Like, can you watch this grill for me?
Can you just hang on to this? Just turn them over. Just turn them over. Don't worry. It's fine.
Have the little jingle like this, Monster Hunter does. Like, dee 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 dee
dee.
Burnt it.
God. Perfect.
I don't think survival horror went away. I don't.
No, me either.
And you know,
there were some bad survival horror games that came out for a while, and people didn't like them, but they were coming out still.
And I would say that like the notion of like resource management and like games being okay with being like more difficult and constrained, like that is like fairly like that went away for a little while. If you're talking about like the broad big budget games, and now I think like game like that the horror umbrella isn't like a much. You know, not Phantasmagoria, Phantasmophobia.
Phasmophobia.
Phasmophobia.
The game that now, hey, my kid's going back to daycare. Like, we're going to get that. I'm going to play that game. Oh, I just saw they added the feature. Ghosts can go through doors now.
They can open doors now. That's the one that's fucked up the most. No. It's like, if you're hiding in a closet, the ghost will start to pull on the door and you have to reach out and grab the door.
Do the ghosts not realize how hard that feature is?
But I'm
ghosts are making development harder. But here's the thought. This is not a fully baked notion, but what the hell? Why not? I think it's one of those things where it's very easy to conflate the decline of a genre from like what is by the AAA standards of video games versus its actual decline. I think
the immersive sim. We've had that conversation a billion times.
Yeah, but I think survival horror is like one of those things where it isn't. Really, it becomes difficult to make it compatible with what are the objectives of a lot of AAA franchises, I think, where it's like you're kind of trying to dazzle people with graphics and expansive worlds, etc. And at this point, like it's maybe only Resident Evil that is carrying that torch like in the AAA space. I'm trying to think of someone else that's at that tier.
Like, yeah, I mean, Dead Space was around for a while, you know, like doing similar sorts of things. But no, like there's like weirdly, as popular as horror is, like there aren't that many horror games being made like at that scale. Obviously, horror is very, doing very well on the indie side. But there's not a lot of. I was like genuinely shocked there was like no launch horror game. It's like, yo, you have ray tracing, like, and you need to make games fast, like games that are mostly darkness. Seems like that would have been an effective way. The fact that like Microsoft just didn't fund a PT ripoff baffled me that like nobody like saw that as an obvious thing for launch stuff.
So I think the PT example's kind of illuminating because people are like, oh man, like I can't wait to see like just a full budget, like glorious, like old school type horror game. And the answer was a really like narrow constraint, like demo of we're going to like lovingly render the space that you see again and again and again.
Yeah. Yeah.
But what that's playing with is our sense of the uncanny and our ability to create a sense of like menace from what we don't see. And I think like older eras and graphics with different tech, like with different aesthetics and different technology were maybe easier to realize like what's cool about horror in a lot of places, where I think it just seems like it might be a harder thing now for you to get a massive like mainstream tentpole horror release out the door. That seems like a trickier proposition just from the way we increasingly tend to sell games.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's true.
Oh, wait, wasn't there a horror game? Medium came out for Xbox at launch, didn't it? That was not at launch.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely a horror game. I don't know if it's scary, but
Damn.
Wow.
Oh, apparently that game, I dropped it because I didn't like it, and I'm trying to get better at just like not playing games that I'm not enjoying anymore.
Everyone should do that.
That's a healthy habit to have. But apparently that game has like really like fucked up themes around like child abuse and other things towards the end. Like I would highly recommend, like it's a bad game and also like apparently goes to some bad, every person I know that I follow that is like is into horror games, it was very much I'm gonna do this slog for you so I can tell you what's on the other side and like just like don't do it. Like the
and
first
this is coming from even people who will make allowances for the baseline shittiness of a lot of horror games.
Oh yeah, like Voidburger on Twitter, like big Silent Hill person one of those people that like went through the game and was just like do not play this game, like run away from it. It made people so panicked when like Medium is not just bad, but appears to be like outright like atrocious and like a red flag for the studio to like ever play in that space ever again. If like that's what they're gonna like, how they would approach it. And then Medium comes out, and then a couple of weeks ago, the game did like fairly well because people are again starved for horror games, and if you make it like that, audience is devoted to it. I can speak to it because I'm part of them, and. They said, like, oh, we've been working on another big game for the last year or so based on an established IP that we think people are going to be very excited about. And everyone's just like, you motherfuckers, like the monkey paw curls. You wanted another Silent Hill? Yeah. Come get it from Blooper Team and like see how you feel. Especially because I believe Akira Yamaoka did the soundtrack for Medium.
For Medium,
and he has been teasing that he is working on some big project that – there was an interview that went up a couple of weeks ago that was, he's like, yeah, and finally the game that everyone wants from me is going to get announced this summer. And everyone's like putting together the dots on the conspiracy board. And it's like, great. Konami finally, you know, makes a Silent Hill game, and they're going to give it to like the team that like literally just proved making a Silent Hill ripoff that they cannot do it and like are irresponsible with the power. That apparently has been since disproven. Like they're not making a Silent Hill game.
So some people on Twitter were just saying shit.
Well, people were just,
Silent Hill Insiders lied?
Well, I would say Silent Hill Insiders appear to be just as reliable as Elden Ring Insiders at the moment. And so maybe just don't believe, just like wait for it to be announced. Though both those games appear to be in development. And at this
in development,
point,
genuinely.
I will just, genuinely, it does appear a Silent Hill game is going to be announced in the summer. It's not insidery. That's just like, there's just enough smoke for there to be fire. Now, at this point, I'm just waiting to see. I don't know what it is. I somehow missed that
that Kojima was working on a horror game that just got fucking canceled. Like Stadia was going to be involved. Like, bummer. Like, I'm mixed on that guy's games, but I would have liked to seen him. He's very visually inventive. Let Kojima make a.
Oh, I would have liked to have seen that game.
Oh, you know what I should do? I should play Evil Within.
You should. Okay, would you say Evil Within?
You should play Evil Within 2.
I messaged Patrick about Evil Within 2 2 weeks ago, Rob. I was literally like, instead I played Dragon Quest XI, very similar in tone and mode. But I was like, I own Evil Within 2 on something. I have it somewhere on Xbox or on PS4. I think I had it on PS4 because I was looking at my PS5. Like, what could I install? I was like, I heard that game was all right.
Evil Within 2 is you should play the game. It's fantastic. It has a excellent combat system. It's not as Evil Within 1.
Will I be able to appreciate the evil without Evil Within 1?
Yes. Okay. You'll be just fine. Like Evil Within 1 is gnarlier, but also not nearly like it's grimy. Like it's gross and violent. And Evil Within, it's like
I'm waiting for you to say something bad about it.
Well, it's not that much fun to play. Or at least I didn't find it that much fun to play. But I think it's been some years, but I would say the comparison is actually maybe like Evil Dead to Evil Dead 2 is the difference between Evil Within and Evil Within 2.
Sure.
Which is like, hey, like we kind of just took all the stuff you liked and like made it better. And also...
Actually, now that I think about it, I might have only seen Army of Darkness.
You should watch Evil Dead 2.
Very fun.
Evil Dead 2 is a terrific, straight up like, horror movie.
Army of Darkness is the medieval one?
Third. Yes.
Yeah. Third. Yes. Correct. Yeah. Correct.
I haven't seen
any of those movies in probably 15 years. Maybe I've seen Evil Dead 2.
They're
still
great. Like it reminds you that physical comedy is like not really a thing these days. Right. Like this is not the direction. And like Bruce Campbell is just like an incredible like physical comedian. And Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness, I haven't watched them in like 5 years, but like they're still, you know, those movies I'm sure have things that have aged poorly.
Sure.
But like anything from that era, they were still like fun movies. But yeah, they've said that there's going to be more Bethesda games going to Game Pass. It seems almost inevitable they would do like a Series X pass on Evil Within 2. But that game looked great. It's like it's a great game. Like it's one of those games that it didn't make my top 10 list and like I cut it off at 11 and like every year since I'm like, you fucked up, Patrick. That game was like your third favorite game that year and somehow you didn't put it on your top 10. Like it's
I really like Evil Within 2.
This is why we need time to reflect.
Yeah.
This is why we need Waypoint 101.
Let's go. This is the most
Waypoint 101 game.
Hey, look. Hey, look. You know, there's a... You know?
Do not.
Evil Within 2. We'll bring it back.
Evil Within 2. We're bringing it back. It feels like it's of that model of game where that game is so clearly, based on what I've seen of it, a response to, like, hub worlds and open worlds being like the thing in games. How do you do one of those? But it's horror. It's clearly in conversation with Hannibal and other sorts of like Rob, did you not know that about Evil Within 2? Is like
the aesthetic is very like you'll frequently walk into scenes of like grotesque beauty. It's definitely playing in that like
things set up in that way, arranged so for a viewer. And I feel like that stuff makes it like a lot of Waypoint 101 games are like, this is referencing something in pop culture that we're interested in, or this is someone trying to do variation on a huge popular genre space or genre crossover and succeeding or failing. What I'm saying is Evil Within 2 is the zombie U of horror games. That's what I'm saying.
Well, like Evil Within
101 is back.
Was the last game, like Shinji Mikami was the creative director on that. Shinji Mikami, all time, one of the weirdest interviews. Couldn't get anything out of him. Just like, was like a failure of, like, I came out of the interview being like, apparently I suck at this. Like, this is like, so, it's like, it's 11 a.m. and I feel demoralized for the rest of the day. You know, it just, you know, like, ask a question thinking like, can't wait to hear what the master of horror has to say. And it's like, one sentence onto the next one. It's like, oh, all right. I don't know how to phrase questions. You know, it's
listen,
difficult.
that you just speaking of interviews, let me shout out stuff on the site really quick.
Sure.
You have a piece up. That's up now, right? You linked me. just like
yesterday. My Sakaguchi piece.
Yeah.
The reason I asked you about Gunpla.
You did ask me about Gunpla. Fantasian is like so pretty because of the Fantasian is an upcoming Apple Arcade JRPG.
Yep.
That Sakaguchi is making along with a team, obviously. But it's filled with little like actual dioramas that have been scanned digitally as like the backdrops of basically the whole game, as far as I can tell.
The entire game. Yeah. Like they said, they had to like pretty intricately figure out what the level of design was because, you know, if you like looked at the, you get, you know, halfway through development, you're like, actually, we want this building to do this. You can't just like go into an Unreal editor, you know, like and change the model. The way it actually worked was like they figured out the path of the game, but then like the modeler, they'd see the diorama in person and they go, oh, actually, like we should make that ladder interactable, like as opposed to just aesthetic. And so they found that the dioramas like had that sort of relationship with the level design, was, you know, they added things because they wanted to make it part of the interactivity. I mean, like the level of detail they showed
so cool
for the dioramas was like there was an interior bedroom scene and like the hinges work, the doors open to like the dressers, like details that do not matter for like the player will not open that dresser, but don't worry. Like they could when they were, you know, scanning it and designing it. And then like the tragic thing was like, I asked at some point in the interview, you know, what are you going to do with the diorama? Do you have like one in particular you really like that you're going to like, you know, put in your studio? And he's like, actually like the techniques they use to make these things, they're just going to rot and crumble. And so they're just sitting in a shed right now and they'll just be gone and just like disappear into the earth.
That's so sad.
That stinks.
God.
But the game serves as the like memorial to them.
Yeah. That's exactly right.
Yeah, yes. Totally. There's still something in me that goes like, oh, I want them to last longer than that. But that's just the way of life.
He's like, it's made out of clay, and like clay is just not meant to, you know.
Yeah.
And then once you apply all the extreme painting techniques that they use, it's like it just kind of destroys the material over time.
On the blockchain.
Have I subjected y'all to my favorite niche collectible hobby, which is miniature rooms?
No,
like this 1929 powder room that sold for $3,100.
$3,100.
But if you look at these photos. If you look at these photos, this is like looking into a bathroom.
Wow.
It's wild. This is from...
Holy fuck.
Yo, I love the scale in the mirror of this image. Holy shit.
With the phone?
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You can see the...
Yeah, it's unbelievable. I have to show you what these actually look like because they're presented in these very tasteful like wooden boxes that you just sit on your desk or whatever. Shit. This is someone named Chris Toledo, ToledoMiniatures.com. The work is just, it's like walking into your grandmother's like bathroom and being like, oh yeah, this is my child. I was always kind of creeped out by this bathroom, but in retrospect, I think it was really beautiful. And some basic ideas I have about like what is aesthetically pleasing originate in this space.
This is, I'm looking at the picture though. It really is incredible. The lighting is like spot on. It looks like a Zillow photo of like, this is something you'd find like, oh, this is an old house and here's the bathroom and the wear lines, the cracks in the masonry. It's unreal.
Yep. Yeah, no, it's, I like truly think it's a beautiful object. Like, I think that it's, the craftsmanship here is through the roof. It's one of my, I link this to people once a year or something. Here's another,
I'm
here's
now
another
in the
finished bathroom.
I'm losing my mind.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's so good. It makes it like, I don't make real shit. This is real shit. This is what people, this is real technique. I'm not an artist. Get this shit. This is it. Anyway, shout outs to, again, it's easy to look at these prices and be like $4,200 for this bathroom, for this fake. I could get a real bathroom redone for $4,200.
1929 powder room, $3,100 sold.
Sold.
Sold. Sold.
Listen, if I like stumbled into money, I would buy a little miniature.
Sure.
The kitchen is the wildest one. That's the one I want to get, Rob. The kitchen, which is the first one in the gallery, which is just this like huge, like. This is a kitchen for
Holy
a manor
shit.
Or something, right? This is like a serving kitchen. I love it so much. All this counter space. I could see Rob really doing work
the
here.
The floor in this bathroom is fucking wild. The like little scum bits between the it's like penny tile. Wow. It's like, you know, bath scum or whatever. Bathroom
this
scum.
This kitchen anyway. Is like, I can see the servants talking about the murder, like in this space.
100%.
This is the most Gosford Park ass, like.
Amazing. It's so good. The fucking water heater or whatever that is on this. I don't know what that is, but on the side of the cabinets, it's just the detail is astonishing. Anyway, I know people love it when we describe things we're looking at on a podcast, but people should just go to ToledoMiniatures.com and watch along with us because it's nice to see that there's stuff in the world like this still.
Yeah.
It's nice to see people just making cool looking things, even though the market must be very limited. All right. On that note, that's going to do it for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Welcome back to Waypoint. you can find me on Twitter at twitter.com/Austin_Walker. You can find Waypoint at Waypoint. You can find Patrick at
Patrick Klopik.
Rob
at Rob Zachney.
And Cotto.
@Cotto_appears.
Thank you, as always, to Bowen for letting us use the track Miss You off the EP Pale Machine. Find out more about that at waypoint.zone/BOEN. Until next week, as always, fuck capitalism, go home, peace. Also, if you're in a place where it's warm, go soak up that sun. Go get some good clean air. Enjoy that the weather is turning if you're in a place where it's turning.
Take that peanut butter jelly outside.
Take that peanut butter outside for a walk. Mm-mm. I'm in meetings all day, so I have to do it for me. All right, peace.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Has there always been a couch behind you, Patrick?
Since I reorganized my office, like that. I mean, that couch has always been there, but you haven't been able to see it.
So ah.
Gotcha. That'll do it, huh?
Huh.
Not a very good couch. Nothing to be impressed by. It's just there. It folds out into a bed, which is about the only useful thing that it does.
Oh. That's pretty useful.
I have this TV next to my desk. I've tried to lay down there, being like, oh, I'll just like lay on this couch instead of in my office chair to play a game. And it's like, this sucks.
Yeah.
I've thought about getting like I can't get like a proper sitting chair in the office because it would take up too much space. So I don't know. I'm thinking like get like a beanbag chair, like lay on the ground, comfortable. It's like be on the ground, not in my office chair, but not in that uncomfortable couch.
When's the last time you were in a beanbag chair?
What's what?
When's the last time you were in a beanbag chair?
Very good question, Austin.
I have a specific answer to that. I think, probably over 10 years ago at this point, early passes, when that was one of their defining kitschy traits, was that, you're going between levels. Here's these beanbags, get your game on in between, going on the show floor. Which people are doing, like tens of thousands of people are doing this.
True.
And then someone pointed out to me, like, there's like no chance they clean that shit between days of the show. And I was like, oh, all right. And I'm not going to sit in this beanbag chair.
That is 100%.
I got up and that was, that's probably like, I'm, you know, there's probably a good chance of like being in a beanbag chair, but like, that's the last time I remember it. Like, that's a very core memory. Don't sit in those chairs.
Wait. Is there something about
Now and then you developed a lot of back problems, correct, Patrick?
Have I developed a lot? I don't. Well, look, you got to lift your baby like you'd lift a bowling ball, and you got to like lift it with your legs. Don't lift it with your back. I've learned herniating, you know, getting a herniated disc. I've learned good lessons about body posture, you know, life lessons to carry me forward.
Right. But is the beanbag going to be a helpful companion?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if that would like, I'd have to just, you know, do some research, you know. Rob, can you get on, get me a list of beanbag chairs? Let's go.
Beanbag research.
I don't know what chair to get. I should have brought this problem up on the podcast. Somebody assuredly has had this issue. Like, how do I
only about salad.
Exactly. Yeah, if we get in-depth salad essays, then surely I can get a recommendation on a
beanbag
chair to lay on the ground that is in between office chair and bad couch.
You just need like a nice
one of those poolside recliner things.
Ooh. Those are great for your back.
Just get currently.
Okay, there we go.
There's a slide.
Oh, hey. That's not.
That's
what
close.
What I should do is like, I should just. This office isn't used for anything except for like this space is not.
That's precious. Alarming news.
Right. Rob, you get your content from this office. But I could just put like a recliner chair in there. Who gives a fuck if it looks like gaudy and doesn't use the space correctly?
Who cares?
Just get it like a.
There's a slide there. It's already not using the space correctly.
That's what I mean. Like, someone's going to walk into this room and be like, Patrick, what are you doing? I was like, I got kids. Like, I can do whatever I want with space. Like, none of it means anything anymore.
Any space not used by furniture is just more space for toys.
Ready to clap?
No.
Not at all.
Woo, not even close. Strong start.
App's not open.
That's right, the energy.
Yeah. Why does this Thursday feel like a Monday?
Because we haven't done one of these in forever, in 6 weeks.
I'm
starting to realize, like, oh man, I don't have a lot that's new to talk about on Thursdays.
We should have.
No, we gotta turn up the bullshit. Let's go. Yeah. Like, vroom, vroom, vroom.
Ready to go? Ready to clap? Are we all there?
Yep.
All right, 43.